Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Worth notice, posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And it's Monday evening again, and so Edwin is with me again. Hi Edwin, how are you going?
G'day Martin, it's a week of all sorts, and things are on a knife edge. And with me, things are being on the edge of the trowel. I'm doing a bit of bricklaying. 30 years ago, I worked as a brickies labourer for about 3 weeks, I think I lasted. And now I'm just rejigging things around, Martin. But there's a lot happening, and the world seems to be on a knife's edge as well.
Well, I should just bear in mind that Churchill used to like laying bricks as a way of relaxing. So if he can do it, you can do it.
Well, man, the lower back is in a lot of pain. he must have a stronger back than what I have. But, look, there is an art form to it. You sort of think, oh, yeah, I'll just throw a few bricks together, slap them on. I think chickens have more fun laying eggs than brickies have laying bricks.
Yeah, I know. I think the first two are fine, but when you actually, have done 200 and then 300, I've done a bit over the years, but it just takes forever. I mean, it's not the sort of thing that I turn around afterwards and think, ah, that was really enjoyable and I've really left my mark. I can find other ways of coming to that conclusion. but I reckon actually it's quite a good analogy for the RBA, right? Because the RBA has been trying to build bricks in one direction, and as fast as they try and build them, the market sort of whipped them away again. So they haven't really achieved much at all.
The question is, Martin, have they been laying bricks or been pulling down bricks? Pulling down the economy and pulling down the hopes of the young families, the hopes of people wanting to come into the market. Brick by brick, it's been absolutely the proverbial poop show as we've been watching it evolve over the last few years. And with this pandemic, you sort of thought you would have thought that things would have been a lot more and a lot better entry points for those wanting to come into the market. But now it's the opposite. So yeah, they've been pulling the bricks and the carpet from underneath the new property people, Martin.
Well, there'll be some smart shuffling in the words on Tuesday after the RBA meeting, I suspect, suddenly along the lines of, well, there's new data, we have updated our expectations, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, frankly, if you look at it over the last few years, their track record is pretty appalling. And of course, a number of people are now saying, oh, look, as though rates will go up. There are some indications they could go up, but I also think there are some significant indications of weakness in the economy here and around the world. And so we've got these sort of things pulling in two different directions, right? Rates going up, rates going down, inflation and deflation. Who's going to say? I don't know. It really is complicated.
Oh, look, it is. Dusty and Evan have got an each way bet. One saying yes, they'll go up. The other one saying no. I'm sort of sitting on the fence on this one. I don't think we've ever seen the rates go up on the Melbourne Cup week, have we? Has there ever been a time where the rates have gone up, on or soon after the Melbourne Cup?
No, I think they tend to sort of go to sleep then and wake up in February, right? So, by which time they'll have more data, right? So I wouldn't be surprised if they simply say, well, this is what we're thinking, but, let's look in February. I could be wrong, but no, it would be quite interesting. It might even stop the race,
Oh, look, it would definitely stop the race if it... if they did come up with an upward trend, but look, I'm one to think, I'm a believer. I'm one to think that the safest bet for them is to leave it as is, not move. And obviously, we're going to talk a little bit as to the what ifs, because it is one of those weeks. So what if this happens or what if that happens? But we'll talk a little bit more on the what if the rates do go up and the listing numbers also rise. What would that mean all around with property, freestanding homes, apartments, and the like, and other aspects of the economy? But Dusty says yes, rates are going up. Evan says no. I'm taking Evan's position on this one, and also because of everything else that's happening with where our Prime Minister is over in in the big wide world of all these leaders that are supposed to lead us out of all this pandemic and out of all this strife. You know, some are wearing masks, others aren't. And what the hell is our Prime Minister doing? You know, they're trouncing around, trolloping around with no mask. Shame on him.
Well, that's right. Yes, he even sidled up to the French Prime Minister to try and actually get a picture, I think, to show that he was actually talking to him, right? But I'm not sure there's a lot of love there at the moment in terms of the relationship between Australia and France. So we'll see how that
could have been that could have been the start of World War III, Martin. It would have been. I would have loved to have seen that. In for all, on for all, young and old, as they say. It's it would have been rather, but here, yeah, I saw part of his what the French leader said. So it was rather pointed.
It was pointed, yeah, absolutely. And it's also quite interesting, of course, because the French and the Brits always have a little bit of a funny relationship, and they've got this sort of dispute about fishing at the moment, right? Because basically there were about 40 or 50 boats from France didn't get a permit. So they and now France is saying, well, maybe we'll turn off power to the Channel Islands or things like that. I mean, it's crazy times. They've been crazy times.
Yeah, and because of that, because of the craziness and everything else other than your pure economics or the pointers, the economic pointers that would give us a better indication as to what the RBA would do move or which way things should go and policy changes, because of all these other crazy things that have been thrown into the mix, rumors of war, potential war, issues with the Middle East, issues with China, issues everywhere, and pandemics and our local issues. I'm just sticking to my indicators, which is the what if numbers go up as a habbing, and we have been noticing the numbers going up. What are the conversations that the selling agents are having with their vendors? How that's evolving with the reports that we get on a daily and a weekly basis, and how that's changing the landscape. What they're saying with regards to some areas that were experiencing drops from 75 listings in some suburbs, from 75 listings, and these are just freestanding homes, 75 listings on market to 25. And then at that time we spoke and we said that once the lockdown restrictions are eased, that we're going to see a rise, and we are. And in those particular suburbs that we're keeping an eye on, now the numbers have gone back up to 46, 47. That's what the locals are telling us. So, all these are our indicators, our on-the-ground indicators that give us an understanding of where the property market could potentially go. What are the main influences? But then there's everything else that comes into the mix. So one thing for sure, Martin, I think the people that are going to have the biggest questions on their minds right now, a friend of mine right now, are the people that jumped into the market with two high LVRs over the last 6 to 12 weeks, very high LVRs, with that fear of missing out, paying over the odds for the new shiny bench tops and spruced up staged homes with no regard for proper building and pest inspections, where now they're sitting potentially on a hole that's just going to be never ending ongoing rectification work. So I think they're the ones, and unfortunately, I think it's the Gen Zs and the some others that have come in late.
Yeah, and I would make the point, Edwin, that a lot of those first time buyers who flooded the homeland package market, earlier in the year, and committed probably right at the top, are now finding that the price of construction continues to rise because people can't get the parts and it's taking a lot longer. And the banks are getting more twitchy with regard to those mortgages. So suddenly there's a gap opening up between what they contracted to and what they committed to and what they can actually get from a financing perspective. I think this is going to get quite ugly.
Oh, it's going to become very, very, very ugly. And the good thing is that our followers have been listening to us. They DM me regularly. They some that managed to get a hold of my phone number have called me. They've emailed me. All sorts of communication, and they've taken heed to what we've been saying to our WeChat chatterers and people that have been give us reports, give us information, real on time or timely accounts of what's happening overseas as to how it's going to affect us. Yeah, we talked about the supply channels. We talked about the issues, the tension with China, what they're thinking, not following the mainstream media or even the mainstream media from the States or our mainstream media, but following, you know, what the locals are saying there in China, our WeChat chatterers that are pretty much all over the world bringing us information. And we've been ahead of the curve with a lot of this. And yes, there's a lot of pain there. You know, you and I have warned our followers as to going out there and getting the white goods before they even started talking about it on Channel 9 or Channel 7. Yeah, thank God that I got in early with all the air conditioning units, and the last thing store was last week. And as of next week, you know, there's going to be a rise of 25 to 30% with installs in some of the aircon units that quite frankly are becoming more and more scarce. So, you know, another tip for our audience, get out there, and it's going to be a dry, hot summer. So get in early before everybody else does.
Well, and the good news is I managed to get my plugs. So I've got my XLR plugs, so I can now rewire my studio. I actually got the last set of plugs that were available in Australia. So there you go.
Oh, well, there you go. And it's if you had to order them from overseas, it would have been stuck on one of those containers out in harbour.
Absolutely. The delivery time frame would have been ridiculously long. And just on the WeChat chatters, you know, the China thing's quite interesting, right? Because it does look to me as though there are some very important events. So we've got the 8th, I think, of November, the big meeting, which will effectively endorse the strategy going forward for a more equal society that they want to play out. There's also a detuning of some of the economic activity on the back of that, and some interesting news in terms of jobs.
Yeah, look, what's happening in China, I've noted in the last couple of years that it's what happens there generally unfolds with us locally as well. And you and I spoke about the policy. We discussed the policies from last year that the government brought in with regards to who they were really going to be helping out moving forward, which was anybody pretty much up to the age of 35, and after that, you really have to fend for yourself. So if you find yourself at a loss of, with less hours or with no job, you know, you can whistle Dixie. So this is what's happening and playing out broadly now, and it's really apparent. And there's a lot of chatter in China, particularly in the areas where they've got these massive factories and where they're employing a lot of people, just outside of Hong Kong. The city between Guangzhou and Hong Kong, Shenzhen, and we're hearing that big companies that would otherwise employ tens of thousands of people are now moving further inland, where they can get cheaper labor, and also the automation is going to also means a depletion of jobs, of labor. And the simple fact is with this, the overall tone or the main tone of this conversation is that a lot of the people that are now in the early 40s and 50s, they basically can't move with these companies further inland because they're well established. They bought a property in those cities. They can't move out. If they were in the 20s or even in the early 30s, they may consider a move with the factories. So what we're finding is that the bigger companies are shrinking in terms of employment size, and also a lot of the SMEs are disappearing altogether. So from 10 outlets or restaurants that a family or a group may have owned, they've basically been downselling the commercial properties and the restaurants and so forth, to now they're talking about having two, and now those two are on the market for sale with no interest, and yet after that not knowing what they're going to do. And these are people that are in the mid 40s. So I think, and the question is how long is it going to be? Not will it be, but when will it be? that the same thing starts happening here, where we see a lot of the SMEs disappearing over the next 12 to 48 months. And obviously, with the SMEs being the biggest sector of employers that operate or that that we have, then how is that going to translate into people paying down their mortgages and all basically keeping up with inflation?
Yeah, I think this is a really important point. And if you look at the transportation sector, for example, there are a lot of long distance drivers in Australia who are now in their 50s, right? But the whole driver gig thing is getting more and more tedious and more difficult. And so that could be a sector where we see quite a lot of businesses fold. We're also seeing it from some of our SME data as well. So I think we're going to see this very patchy. And okay, things are opening up in some areas, and that's good. But there's a lot of question marks in my mind about just how much damage has been done to the SME sector. And it's not necessarily going to all sort of be thrown up on day one. It's going to take a bit of time to work through. But I wouldn't be surprised to see more SME failures over the next little while.
Look, and that comes back to, as I've been, we've been talking about at my industry, the real estate industry. It's going to have a huge impact. Even just talking today, I was in regional, went over the mountains and was looking at property in and around Bathurst for a couple of clients, and it was interesting talking to the agents there as to what they had to say and how they've been coping with very little listings and what they're doing and how they've seen the people transition from one industry to another or try to transition or in the case as it is in Sydney take on people not necessarily within the regulations, taken on commission only, and people are prepared to basically willingly prepared to work for a lesser income or a potential income just to do something. And this is where I'm looking at also talking to some to other people in other industries and them telling me that their partners that have now are not employed, now they're looking for hobbies and something to do at home in order to produce something, to make something at home in order to sell on eBay or Gumtree or through a lot of these social media pages in order to bring in some money to make up for the increase in living expenses.
Yeah, well, I think you should create some more YouTube channels, right? We need more, we need more channels. We need more content, right? So now, I just want to pick up this wonderful little video you've got, right? You've been talking to tenants.
Well, yeah, I thought I'd secretly record one of my conversations with a local in a complex that we were looking at. One of our buyers had interest in an apartment in this particular complex, and we went and had a look at it. We went and walked through it. Now, there were some things of the complex that were obviously that caught our attention, and then we could see it. But then there were parts of the complex that we couldn't go into because it was made up of different blocks, and we didn't have access to those. We only had access to the unit that the apartment that the agent had the keys to, and the block of apartments where this unit was located. But in doing so, we went to the basement and we were just looking around as I do, and lo and behold, along comes an occupant, a resident of that block, and I approached her and I just asked her some questions, and it's all there. And they say silence can be very deafening at times.
Yeah, well, we'll show the clip because it's quite amusing.
What's your overall impression of the building? Okay. That says a lot.
They're doing construction works at the moment.
Right.
And then they're going to do another. So they're replacing all the balconies that side.
Okay.
There's no balconies that side, the back building. And
in terms of you mean the tiles or the old pile, have they? The tiles,
the waterproofing? Apparently wasn't waterproof properly. They're replacing all of the doors as well.
So yeah, and we noticed that there was a lot of the doors were a lot of there was a lot seemed to be a lot of moisture in the door and they swelled.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's moisture.
Okay.
Yeah, all of my we're at top floor, and it's got cracks throughout, like okay. structural. Yeah. So
yeah, but the penthouse got sold for 1.6.
Yeah, we're in a penthouse.
Okay.
The penthouse, like
yeah.
top floor, that's it.
Yeah, anything on the top floor.
But also, it really does highlight the need to talk to the people who actually know the place because they live there, right? That they are by far the people who are going to give you the best information as to what's going on. Don't trust the real estate agent. Don't trust the vendor. Talk to other people.
Well, and in this particular complex, Martin, let me say that the three bedroom apartment, we were only looking at a two bedroom apartment in the complex, but the three bedroom apartment, which they say it's a penthouse, it's really just a three bedroom apartment on the top level, with a bit of a courtyard, sold for 1.6 million. And I know the agent that sold it, and I've had runnings. Or should I say dealings with him in the past, and I know that that agent can speak with double speak, and I'd be based on what we saw that was happening in the rectification work that we were told was going to happen by this particular resident. 1.6 million is probably 300-400 over the odds as far as I'm concerned. Given the state of the building in general and what was happening, so it is rather interesting. So yeah, don't be fooled, and make sure that you do all your checks and balances.
Absolutely. Well, we can't say enough because it's so important. And just on the listings, it's interesting because the numbers are still climbing, and I think our hypothesis, both yours and mine, is that listings will continue to climb now the lockdowns are unwinding. People are now worrying about interest rates and trying to get in quick and all sorts of things. So there's potentially more listings coming.
Well, I would say the smarter ones are going to be basically thinking to themselves, well, let's sell quickly. Let's sell before the rates do climb that 50, 75, 100 basis points, however high people may think they're going to go to or whatever, depending on who's in their ear, who they're listening to or what they're reading. It makes sense. You would sell on the high and then you'd sit back and wait and buy on low. Or at least now they've got a number of things. The fear of prices dropping, the ability to move around, and because that was one of the other factors that was stopping or hindering listings coming on, and that's why the spring selling season started very late, as far as I'm concerned, and I think it's going to go into early December, which is so we're about 3-4 weeks behind in listing numbers. The comparison between the last 2 weeks is rather interesting, and we are etching closer to the 8,400 or so freestanding home listings that we peaked at last year in spring, and I feel that we are going to get there. We're climbing at about on average around 400 or so new listings every week adding onto the pile, and I would say we're starting a lot higher, 275 or so listings higher this week than last week. And quite frankly, with the conversations and the discussions that we've been having with agents, there's a lot more coming on. And I can start, I think the tap's slowly opening up on the apartments as well, Martin, which is rather interesting. Hence the reason why, if you're going to be looking into apartments, now's not the time to rush in and to be fooled by the by the spruikers that have been saying of late that although other apartments in the blocks may be waning in price or maybe going down in price or maybe dubious or whatever the terms they use, nonetheless the high end apartments are still faring very well and achieving high prices. Well, I think it's a wait and see on that one.
Well, I certainly have had a few interesting discussions with people, particularly relating to apartments. And one of the interesting observations is how keen agents are now to have a conversation about a sale, before any auction, before any official process, right? It's a real big change from where it was a few months ago. So it seems to me that many agents are now smelling the change in the weather, right, and are trying to get in quick before things fall apart.
Well, the apartment numbers, although we haven't been watching, I do watch them, but we don't talk about it a lot. But what I have noticed in the last 3 weeks is that the apartment numbers listings on market in Sydney are starting to climb very rapidly. So it's only a matter of time that they're going to overtake the house listings. And quite frankly, they should be at around 15,000, 16,000 in my books, because there's a lot more, there's a hell of a lot more that are vacant and that are that the spruikers and the developers are holding on to. And drip feeding the market in order to hold it back. But with everything that's happening internationally and locally, and with this fear of rate rises, it's going to be more pressure on these people that are holding the bag with apartments. And some are holding, let's not forget that some are holding multiple apartment purchases, not just off the plan, but existing and established. And a lot of my colleagues in the Asian community are holding two or three that I know of.
Mm. Well, talking of things like that, I nearly fell off my chair last Friday when I read Christopher Joy's AFR article, right? Because Christopher Joy has been very much on the bullish side of property prices forever, right? Except now he's not.
Well, I guess the question really is going to be is, look, I agree with what he's saying, with a lot of what he's saying, but I think there's my view, and I'm sort of going to be a little bit you might get a little bit toe with me, Martin, but I don't believe it's going to be as bad as what he's saying, or they're predicting the 20-25% in across the board. This is the argument, and you and I are on the same page, are on the same view, is that there's multiple markets in Sydney, and there's the Sydney it's markets, not just one market. So if you paint Sydney with a brush, obviously the apartment market is what's really going to come undone, and going to come undone could come undone very, very rapidly as the tap begins to open up on that. But with regards to land or freestanding homes and land, it's going to be those areas where that are going to be affected the most. As I said, the Gen Zs and the millennials that went in with high LVRs as the principal place of residence, or the ones that also got caught up with the equity that got built up in homes over the last 18 months, and went out and started splurging on high-end cars, vehicles, and all sorts of toys, as well as leveraging off the equity into other investments. They're the ones that are going to come unstuck. But what I've also seen is that we've got to differentiate the downsizers and the people that have come in, as we spoke before last year, where I call them the kryptonites, the people that have made a hell of a lot of money in the cryptocurrencies, in the share market, and they've just basically changed. And a lot of these people come in with, very, very low LVRs. And one of our clients currently is buying a property, with no mortgage, from all the proceeds of the crypto that he's made over the last 3 years. So this is, so we need to really, really dissect this whole article that is and what he's saying. Yes, the market is going to shift, but I think for me, if there's a combination of a rate rise and we see an upsurge in listing numbers, all hell's going to break loose. That to me is doomsday.
Mm, and it could be that he's in a way talking his book a bit, right? Because he's trying to highlight what happens if interest rates were to rise, because he doesn't necessarily want them to rise, right? So, with all of these things, there's probably more going on. But you're right. The micro markets is what you got to understand, right? So all property markets are a series of micro markets, and applying top level movements or analysis tells you absolutely nothing. In fact, it can be totally misleading. You have to go granular. You have to look at the individual units or houses, the area, the type of property, all of those things. And only at that point do you really see what's really going on. One of the reasons my one-to-one service is quite helpful for people, because we go really granular, right? Because this high level stuff is unhelpful.
Well, exactly right. You're 100% there, Martin. That's what we have agreed on all the time, and we yeah you know, we and that's what we've been saying from for a very very long time. The way that they paint it, you know, is obviously to a headline to capture the readers and capture the attention, because they're in, you know, that's their business, is to sell viewership on online or in the physical transcript by way of the paper. But I guess what we have to look at and be very very discerning of is what markets we're talking about. What areas, who's coming in, you know, apartments, house and land, because we've also got to consider, as we keep saying over and over again, you know, these hundreds of thousands of people with PR visas ready to come up. And these, I'm talking about people, not the students, not the not the tourists, not the backpackers. I'm talking about serious families that are coming over, that are basically, you know, because they're looking at Australia as a safe haven, and they are professionals that we are in need of and have been for many years, if not a whole decade, that I can remember, and that is in the medical profession. And these people are coming, and they're not going to be buying apartments, and they're coming in for various reasons, as we've said, and yeah, so they're going to be looking at areas not particularly in the Asian, within the Asian communities either. They will be, and from what our sources tell us, they will be, and they are, and they have been looking, and they, even some of our clients are getting us to look at areas outside of the Asian communities, the Asian clients and expats that are coming back, that have been overseas for 10, 15, 20 years, and now coming back. And, you know, one of the criteria is we don't want to be within the Asian community. Take us somewhere else where there's going to be, where they've got good schools, safety, security, and open space to enjoy the fresh air.
Absolutely, and of course now with the borders open and, you know, international flights starting to ramp up again, that's really going to be a very important trend, I think, that people need to be tracking. But you've got the solution to housing affordability, right? Which is a simple one, and I don't know why anybody hasn't thought of it before.
Well, you know, I think it was about 17 years ago I was toying with the idea of trying to sell land and staking a hold of a part of the moon, but I just couldn't get up there and, you know, drive the flag and claim it. You know, on the moon, I was going to sell, you know, some moon space, but, you know, good old Zuckerberg, he's beaten us to the punch, Martin. And the answer's there. And as I put on Twitter, you know, the state government are partnering up with FacePage, call it FacePage, and they're about to announce the new first-time buyer scheme, property incentive program called Meta Homeverse. I think you get the 3D goggles, you know, those virtual reality goggles, and a tent, and that's it, and you pay in crypto.
Brilliant. I mean, it's so simple, isn't it, right? Because, you know, you've got shelter from the tent, but you've got the 3D view of your palatial apartment and lands beyond. And as you say, you just pay it in Bitcoin, it's virtually yours.
Yeah, exactly. You just don't know where you're going to wake up from one day to the next, whether the tent's going to be blown away. But look, it's really... Look, I jest about it. It's just so. It is sad, and I do take the mickey out of the state government, as you know, with regards to the policies and what they're implementing. And I mean, this is this would give people a greater experience than giving them the first-time buyers grants and all these other incentives now that have got, you know, hundreds of thousands of people caught up in this. With this new home building program, purchasing and loans and this and that, and, you know, on 2% from loans from the government and the government making up the other 15% of this or that, all these crazy crazy incentives and ways that the government have really all they've done is stimulated the prices to go up, and it feathered the and lined the pockets of the developers and the construction industry.
Yeah, that's exactly right, as we've discussed many times. And of course, part of that is also the old underquoting issue, right, which has been getting yet another run. I have to say, I get a bit yawny on this because, I mean, this isn't a news story, is it? But The Age came out again and said, oh, we've got great news, you know, there's massive underquoting in Victoria going on.
Yeah, it's one of those things, no shit, Sherlock. But if you look, if our viewers just do a Google search on AFR and underquoting, you'll see, and I've sent you a screenshot of one of the articles that was written on the on the AFR in 2012, and this is where basically George, whom you've had on the show, and myself, we laid into Enzo at the time, because he was basically blaming the I laid into him on Twitter when I just started using Twitter, and really laid into him and really hammered it down, and the AFR picked up this article and quoted George on it, because it was simply ever since, I think one of the earliest articles that I read on the AFR with regards to underquoting, particularly with Victoria, was in 2010. I've written a few articles on what was, Property Observer with regards to underquoting. I've written, on posted some stuff on LinkedIn in the past, but this one was the best. This with the REIV, they basically blamed the vendor. They have been blaming the vendors, and they will continue to blame the vendors. And if Enzo was still in the REIV, they'll blame the vendors till he gets put in a pine box and buried somewhere. But it's nothing new. It's the regulations, the legislation, has been etched in since the early 2000s, and nothing's changed. What has changed is the license that the REIVs, that the REIs, the REIV and the REI New South Wales have basically given their members to just go out and do whatever they want to do. I mean, the old saying is, and this comes from the halls of the REIs, and that is, price it low and watch it go, price it high and watch it stay, and so forth. It'll never fly. So it's just one of these endemic things. It's entrenched in the industries. And as I said, look, if you Google myself and LinkedIn, I haven't been on LinkedIn for about 4 years, but I posted some articles with regards to underquoting on LinkedIn and on Property Observer, if some of our followers want to have a read on that. But until they start really shaming these agents and really making and really lifting the fines, it's going to keep on going. It's not going to stop.
No, it's interesting because the article included a quote from REIV, which essentially tried to redefine what an underquote was. So, it wasn't what you and I think of an underquote. It was basically a very narrow subset, when in fact, frankly, this is a much bigger issue. And certainly, massive number of property sales have been underquoted. And one of the proponents for looking at this in Victoria said, you understand that people are underquoting partly to get a bigger mailing list for later sales, right? That's part of the deal, as well as just trying to suck more people in and all those things. So, the message again has to be, folks, understand what the value of the property is, and you can't necessarily take what the agent tells you as being a fair and true representation of anything in particular. You need to do your own work.
Yeah. And this is I wrote an article, I came up with the term, the what if. And this is the what if dilemma with regards to underquoting. It's good and fine if when I say good and fine, it's for agents would seem that it's okay to underquote when the market's going up because they get away with it, and the vendors don't necessarily, and the vendors basically think they've done a great job and they get rewarded more. But when the market is on its way down, Martin, and they start underquoting, well, people are going to take them at the call, And if the market's going down and they underquote, all they're going to be doing is driving the prices downwards, even at a greater knot, at a greater speed. And quite frankly, they're doing an injustice by the vendors. And this is when vendors will start screaming blue murder and will start taking the agents to task. That's the first thing. The other thing that a lot of vendors don't understand with this whole thing of underquoting is that a lot of the agents here in Sydney, a number of agents and agencies here in Sydney have been used to, over the last few years, used to signing up agency agreements with an incentive base. So basically the underquoting of the property starts with the vendor. You know, they underquote the value of the property to the vendor themselves. So for example, the property, you and I may believe that it's worth $1.2 million, because of our analysis, because of our research, because of our comparable sales, because of the on-time information that we have on hand in order for us to make a real judgment as to the value of the property. But vendors themselves don't have access to these tools either, Martin. And what happens is the agents will go to the vendor and say, look, we believe that your property is worth from $1 million to $1.05 million, and they will give them dated comparable sales that may have been 3 months ago or 6 months ago, not the most recent, which they know they are very much aware of. So what happens is they convince the vendors that that is the true value. So what they do then is they sign up an agency agreement that with a range of $1 million to $1.05 million, and they get a 2% commission up to $1.05 million. Then they say, look, if we do a great job for you, if we're able to get you anything over the $1.075 million, right? Don't forget that they told them that the range was $1 million to $1.05 million. But then they come back with this. They say, well, what if we pushed ourselves a little bit harder and got you $1.075 million? Would you think that is great? And the vendors go, oh yeah, an extra $25,000. That's fantastic. That's that'll be great. Well, I'll tell you what we'll do is, what if we get you over the $1.075 million, we get an extra incentive of 10 cents in the dollar. And in some cases, I've known the agents that have taken up to 30 cents in the dollar above the top mark that they've given the vendors, right? So you and I know that the property is worth $1.2 million every day of the week. So they're not only getting the 2% commission up to $1.075 million, right? And then they've convinced the vendors to pay them an extra 10 cents, 20 cents, 30 cents in the dollar for every dollar thereafter. You do the math on that. The incentive on the extra is more than they get paid on the commission. And this is what fair trading, I've been calling on fair trading to really investigate. And they will find it in the agency agreements, but unfortunately, they don't go around to the offices and check these agency agreements. I've told them, I've shared with them, I've put it out umpteen dozen times on Twitter and on other pages and try to talk to the people in fair trading, and they just can't get their heads around that this is actually happening. And it does happen, and I've seen it happen with commercial sites, potential development sites, where the auctioneers have been beating the chests on social media, on Twitter and on Facebook, saying, oh, what a wonderful job this agent's done, $1.4 million above reserve. Yeah, but behind the scenes, there's an incentive program when the reserve is $900,000 and the property gets sold for $2.4 million, you got to ask yourself the question. It's and this is what I alluded to in my what if article on LinkedIn. What if everybody believed that the property was only worth $700,000 or $900,000, and they didn't want to pay much more than that? How much more of an injustice? How much more would the vendor have lost? But when you calculate the value of the land accordingly, to potential subdivisions, to potential DA approvals, to potential rezoning, council rezoning, and so forth, you can come to a very close assessment within 10% of the value of the land, and then you just add on the dwelling, and on the dwelling you've got you add on fixtures and fittings, or any renovation work, or you work out how old the dwelling is, and you start making some real calculations. Now, there's a couple of articles that I put up there on LinkedIn. One of them is the what if people were to believe the low prices and that's all they paid, what an injustice that is to the vendor. And the other one is, dumb and dumber. If agents are telling you that it's only worth a million, or they give you a guide of a million, they either don't know the value of the land in that area, so why would you want to give them the listing for in the first place? And B, they're underquoting. It can only be one of the two. It can't be anything else in between.
Absolutely. Well, it's certainly a very important issue, particularly now. So, folks, just be very alert and cautious around it. Okay? That's the critical message, I think, Edwin. And talking of critical messages, we should also put out a warning, right? The Kiwis are coming.
The Kiwis are coming. Can we say Kiwis, Martin? I was thinking when I sent you the script for tonight, I was thinking to myself, can we say Kiwis? Are you going to get demonetized?
I don't know. I think Kiwis are it's a fairly standard label for the guys over the ditch. My wife's a Kiwi. She doesn't seem to mind when I say that she's a Kiwi. So we'll go with it.
Yeah, we'll go with it. Your wife gives us permission, so it's all right. We tell them to go talk to the missus.
but the interesting thing about this particular article is the suggestion that a number of people from New Zealand are looking quite seriously at Australian property.
Well, yes, but weren't we talking about this early this year, late last year, Martin? Weren't the WeChat chatters already alluding to what they were saying, that they were talking about looking at selling or leveraging off the properties in New Zealand to buy over here in Australia? There was a lot of interest back then. So our WeChat chatters again, they're ahead of the curve, and now it's only now that obviously all the tying up all the searches or the results for this month, for this year, and to write this report, the PropTrek overseas search report by real estate, and lo and behold, the Kiwis have been eyeing us out, and it's not only just now, but they have been eyeing us out for almost 12 months now, and a lot I think we've got a lot of followers in New Zealand, because there have been a lot of people coming over from New Zealand to buy property, and I think there's going to be a lot more. And it's all going to be with the landscape and the changes that the governments implement with regards to these pandemics moving forward.
Mm. And it's interesting because, literally interesting, interest.co.nz published a report today that looked at the number of new builds relative to the number of new population growth in New Zealand, and they concluded actually that we've got the point over there where there's now an equilibrium between the demand for new properties and the population growth. In other words, there's not a real shortage anymore. I think that's quite interesting. And I also know from some of the feedback that I've got, because you're right, we have a number of followers in New Zealand. A number of people in New Zealand are looking across at Australia now thinking, well, maybe that's a better bet than the New Zealand situation, because, of course, the Reserve Bank in New Zealand is now tightening the screws and lifting the lending standards. And, in fact, Adrian Orr is going to make a presentation tomorrow specifically on the property market in New Zealand. I'll be listening to that, and I might make a show later about it, because I think it'll be quite interesting, because, of course, in New Zealand, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand has a specific accountability now to think about property prices in the context of monetary policy, unlike in Australia, where the RBA and APRA turn their faces the other way and say, property prices, nothing at all to do with us.
Yeah, look, that's it. And it's going to be, look, it definitely be an interesting show for tomorrow, and to to see what to hear what they have to say with regards to that. But the change in the landscape. I know some people are talking about. I've heard some. There's been some commentary. I've been sent some links of some people talking about. You know, there's something like 60,000 Aussies looking at exiting. Doing an exodus on Australia and going abroad. You know, going as far as in. You know, some cases going as far as Russia. But quite frankly, there's a hell of a lot more people. Once you get there, there's a hell of a lot more people. You know, coming into and looking at Australia as a safer haven. Outside of mandates, outside of all these other mandates here, you know, it's such a beautiful country. It's a beautiful country. There's a lot of space. I think I guess because of I've got a lot of family in the States, friends in Europe, family and friends in Asia, and South America, obviously, as well. And I get reports from all over, and I really. I've been bagged on Twitter for saying that Australia is the greatest country in the world, but go whistle Dixie. As far as I'm concerned, it is, and there are more eyes on Australia than in any other country in the world. And quite frankly, even if the supply chains were to affect us a lot harder and bite a lot harder, which they will come 2022, but we can still get around. We can still get around to farmland. We can still get around to obviously to get our essential goods. Obviously, a lot harder for people in the tighter communities in the CBDs. But I think there's a lot more ease to get around and to navigate through. The troubles that beset us for 2022, Martin. I think I'm just a great lover of big lover of Australia. It's the best nation in the world.
And the weather's not too bad either. I often say to people, because I have a lot of friends in the UK, right, and I exchange commentary about the weather here compared with the weather over there. Of course, they've just put the clocks into winter mode over there, so it now gets dark at sort of 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the temperatures are dropping, and they've now got 6 months of doom and gloom, right? And I compare the average temperatures in our winter with the summer temperatures over there. It looks a lot better here. So I have to say that the lifestyle and everything else is also good. I'm no way regret the time that I'd made the decision to come to Australia. There are things, though, that could be done that would actually make it even a nicer place, right? If we could improve housing affordability and get rid of some of this stupidity in the property sector. But nevertheless, compared with other markets and other countries, I think we do still carry a very high rating. And, I think both you and I would say it's a great place to live.
Well, definitely. And this is why I say, regardless of the fact that there's reports that say that there's 60,000 going to, as soon as the people are allowed to leave our shores, something like 60,000 was one of the reports that I was listening to on a YouTube channel, up to 60,000. On the other hand, there's 320,000 coming in. And more, and that's new PR holders, PR visa holders, let alone all the expats that will be coming back. So look, it is obviously, and all these things are what play out, in the property arena and things, and these are the things that we keep abreast of and have to stay in tune. Like, you've got issues now with, we've been talking about how. People are going to be potentially moving from Victoria and have been going all the way to Queensland because it's more affordable and the climate may be a little bit better in some people's view than New South Wales. But now with the issues that I've been reading about with the trucking industry there and the transport industry, I think there's going to be a lot more pain there in 2022 with regards to ongoing issues of supply chain issues and movement of goods, and jobs and the tourism industry is going to somewhat struggle as well moving forward, and God knows what else. So look, New South Wales, is the state, not just because we live here, and because you look at those economic factors, you look at those policies, state government policies, you look at what's happening with the different industries and different sectors, the ease to move around, all that play a part. And this is why I think a lot of the people from overseas, New Zealand, America, India, in parts of Asia, do look at Sydney and the greater Sydney region as still somewhat very attractive, regardless of whether the prices are a bit higher than Victoria and in Queensland, in parts of Queensland.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we come to the end of another show. A quick tip from me tonight. Mortgage rates, it'll be the last hurrah for cheap mortgage rates, particularly cheap fixed mortgage rates. So go quick. There are still many people sitting on mortgage rates that are way higher than the best out there in the marketplace because of the so-called apathy tax. So it is worth checking your mortgage rate and seeing whether you can get a better one, because rates will go up from this point to some extent, not sure how much. But I think the trajectory of fixed rates indicates what's going to happen. So that's my tip for the week, Edwin.
Well, my tip, Martin, is if you're gonna do a bit of bricklaying, make sure you have a back brace, and you wear gloves. it's hard yakka. It really is. It's hard on your hands. It's those bricks are they I've got blisters on blisters and cuts, and make sure you get your levels right, because if you don't start on the level, you end up having to redo it, Martin.
Absolutely.
I'll finish this bloody, and don't start with the hardest things. I decided to, I started with a bloody round wall as opposed to just building a box or a square or a rectangle or just the straight walls, putting them all together. Now I decided to go all elaborate, trying to go back. As I said, worked as a bricklayer's labor for about three or so weeks 30 years ago, and trying to remember it all. And one thing I'd forgotten is that it's hard yakka. So absolutely, if you're going to start, the best thing to do is get a local brickie to do it for you.
There's great advice, even if it costs a bit more. Because as you say, if you start on the skew, by the time you've gone up a few levels, Leaning Tower of Pisa has nothing. I look forward to seeing a video of your wall when it's completed, and we'll put it on the later show, huh?
I'm going to try and go and finish it this week, but let's see how we go. If I don't finish it, at least I'll send what I get up to.
Yeah, terrific. Oh, well, and I'm going to strike into another brick in the wall, but I won't. Don't worry, folks. So. Good luck, Edwin. Keep your hands safe. Wear gloves. And we'll do it all again next week.
Definitely, Martin.
See ya. Take care. Bye-bye.